Hi everyone, we are Ivan and Katya from Google DeepMind, and the topic of today's talk will be a tested noise protocol for low TCB trusted execution environments. And the agenda will be as following. First, we will tell you about our specific use case and why we decided to use the noise protocol. And in the rest of the talk, we'll tell you how exactly we are binding together the remote attestation and the noise encryption protocol. But to start with our use case, which is Project Oak. And this is a research project aimed to make it possible for users to reason about how their data is used by the server side. And it should provide hardware guarantees and must be verifiable by external reviewers. And we achieve this by using several building blocks. And the first one is obviously trust execution environments, and which means that Oak is a framework to build applications on top of trust execution environments. And because we want it to be reviewed by external reviewers, we are trying to make the job of reviewing as easy as possible by reducing the TCB. So the TCB should be minimal. And in addition, we're also using several sandboxing techniques, and we use restricted environments. The next building block is remote attestation. And here it's important to note that the verification for the remote attestation evidence is done on the client device. So we are not using any verification service that proxies the attestation results to the clients. And in addition, we try to provide the complete view of the whole server payload to the client device. And thirdly, we employ transparency, which means that the project is open source and it's reproducibly buildable, which means that if you review the code, you can compile it yourself, and you compile it into the same exact binaries that run on the server side. And when you perform remote attestation, you can compare the hashes you received from the server with the hashes that you reviewed yourself, which makes remote attestation meaningful because you are not just receiving a set of hashes, you can connect those hashes to the open source code. And lastly, we also employ binary transparency by publishing all of the binaries that we serve on the server side in the external append-only non-forgeable transparency log. And this is done to prevent malicious insiders from creating targeted attacks on specific users. So that when a user connects to the server, they know that they connect to the same exact binary that everyone else connects to. Because as part of the remote attestation, we are also providing the inclusion proofs for the transparency logs. So I previously mentioned that we try to reduce the TCB, and in doing so, we have implemented our own custom minimalistic firmware and operating system kernel written in Rust. And the idea is that firmware provides features of vBIOS plus bootloader, and firmware is the thing that is generally measured by the hardware as part of remote attestation. And on top of this, we have what we call the restricted kernel, which is a custom Rust operating system kernel, which provides a bare minimum set of features necessary to run our payloads, which means that we have minimal syscall interface, we only have single thread, and the main feature of restricted kernel is that we cannot have unattested executable pages. So the problem that we saw with running general Linux inside the TE is that the attestation, the measurement that you get in the attestation is the initial stage of the VM boot. And after the VM has booted, if there is Linux, it can change. It can start new processes. It can create new executable pages. And this is problematic because the attestation may no longer be valid when you yourself connect to the VM. And this is why we restrict this in such a way so that when you connect to the VM, this measurement stays valid. And I previously mentioned that we try to provide the complete view of the server workload, and this is done by employing the device identifier composition engine, or DICE. And the idea behind ICE is that the initial measurement that you get from hardware measures the firmware, and you get a certificate for the hardware measurement. But you also need to provide the measurements for all of the components that you have loaded into the VM. So what we do is we use firmware to measure and sign the kernel and add it to the certificate chain. And the same is done for the trusted application that is loaded afterwards. So what we end up with is a certificate chain that contains all of the measurement for every single component that is loaded into the VM memory. And because we were trying to minimize the TCB, we had the goal of creating a crypto protocol which will be minimalistic. And we wanted it to have the ability to be bound together with the remote attestation. And because we already use remote attestation, technically we didn't need to have PKI and even certificates. And basically, what we're trying to do is we remove the features that we don't necessarily need in order to minimize the TCB. And an additional goal was to minimize the amount of parsers. So we didn't want to have a protocol that requires you to use certain message formats, for example. Because the more parsers you have in the code base, the more code reviewers have to look very carefully, because more parsers means more places where you have malicious user input. And because we like Rust very much, we also wanted to have a Rust-only implementation. So what we ended up with is the Noise Protocol framework. And I will give this presentation to Katya, who will tell you more about how it works.
Thanks, Ivan. Can people in the back hear me? Perfect. So that's a perfect moment to admit that we lied. There is no Noise Protocol. What there is a Noise Protocol framework. So Noise is a framework for designing minimalistic cryptographic protocols, which are all directly based on Diffie-Hellman key agreement. So the protocol doesn't assume the existence of certificates. There is no PKI. Nobody guarantees anything. You just directly run Diffie-Hellman on a bunch of keys. Also, all these protocols are defined in the byte format. So we don't make it doesn't make any assumptions about what the wire format is. It just specifies bytes, which should make cross-platform implementation really easy, at least in theory. Noise protocols optionally include authentication. But it's not a necessary feature, but it is one that we can make some use of. So let's take a look at Noise Protocol framework in more details. So each Noise Protocol begins with a handshake, and the handshakes are classified into patterns based on the keys that are used within the handshake to establish the shared symmetric key. The keys can be ephemeral, so they are created specifically for each new session. And for most noise patterns, even if you do have static keys, ephemeral keys are still used. Why? Because it's helpful to prevent the replay attacks. But if you do have static keys, then you can also include them in the handshake, and that's how authentication can be provided. Static keys can be either pre-shared between the parties, if you do have a PKI, or also or some other way to distribute the keys. But some noise patterns support exchanging the static keys during the handshake. And all noise patterns come with formal proofs for some confidentiality and authentication guarantees. So there is this really fun tool, which I would encourage anyone interested to go and play with, that helps you get acquainted with different noise patterns. And for each pattern, tells you exactly what guarantees you can get after sending each of the messages in the handshake. because NOIS supports including payloads with its handshake messages, but of course, if the handshake has not been yet complete, the security guarantees will be weaker. You can see exactly how. So let's take a look at a particular example of the NOIS protocol. So in this scenario, both parties have static keys, which they have already exchanged during the prelude. So now both parties have these keys, and the orange arrows show the NOIS handshake itself. So initiator sends its ephemeral key, and also the result of Diffie-Hellman calculations between its ephemeral key and the static key of the other party, and also a Diffie-Hellman computation based on its static key and the static key of the other party. Both parties maintain their local state, and there are rules how this state is updated after each message. That's what the responder does when it receives the message. And it sends back its ephemeral key and Diffie-Hellman's based on its ephemeral key and the initiator keys that it has received in the previous step. So now both parties can take their local state and use it to produce two symmetric keys. One which will be used to encrypt the outgoing traffic and another one which will be used to decrypt the incoming one. The fascinating math behind that is all in the NOIS specification. But let's see how this protocol changes if one of the parties doesn't have a static key anymore. So now initiator doesn't have the static key. It only uses an ephemeral key for the handshake. So, but it still somehow gets the static key of the responder. Now, in the initiator message, there is still its ephemeral key, but only the Diffie-Hellman based on its ephemeral key and the static key of the responder. And same goes for the responder messages. But as you can see, the transcript will still include Diffie-Hellman's on all key pairs that are actually involved in the handshake. And in the end, both parties still get shared symmetric keys. Now let's take the other static key from the equation, and what we get is basically just Diffie-Hellman key exchange based on two ephemeral keys. So what you can see from here is that NOIS protocol framework is really modular. You are not obliged to implement each and every pattern. You can pick what you need. So this is the minimalistic cryptographic protocol that we wanted to take and bind it with our own attestation. What it allows us to do, it allows us to make the attestation a separate step and use NOIS absolutely without modifications. Because again, NOIS comes with this nice formal security proof. We don't want to mess with that. We also wanted to support bidirectional attestation. And as a nice feature, it would be cool if we could also support multiple attestations. So that's what we did. Let's start from the unidirectional attestation first. So attestation will be a separate step performed technically before the handshake. But the reason why I wasn't sure answering Osama's question about whether we are pre or post handshake is that in the ideal world, where we could just run attestation super cheaply, it would be super cool to run attestation over the cryptographic material derived from the handshake after the handshake and bind the two together in this way. But we are not in the perfect world. Attestation is costly. Also not all varieties of attestation that we use allow us to run it over the arbitrary material that we would need for this case. So what instead is we make sure that the attested evidence that we get contains a binding key. And we use this binding key to sign the noise handshake, which, by the way, is a part of the noise specification. So it's not something that we have invented. It is specified that implementations of noise should make the handshake available to the clients, specifically for this purpose, for channel binding. So we just take it and sign the handshake hash plus some other metadata for security, and that's how we create the attested secure channel. This can be easily generalized for the bidirectional attestation, so now both parties provide evidence still contains the binding key. Both parties use these binding keys to sign the handshake hash. The only thing that will be needed is another message from initiator to the responder. And generalization for multiple attestation is also trivial. You just include a bunch of signatures in the final message of the handshake. So that's what noise gives us. A really small implementation. Noise itself is less than 1,000 lines of code. The SDK that we created for the attestation binding is a bit more, but that's mostly because it's very configurable. It's all configuration. And we only need a small subset of crypt functions in order to make that all work. We don't need additional parsers. We don't need to use PKI if we don't have one. But it's a custom solution. Everyone hates custom solutions, us too. But it was practical for us. In contrast, TLS is a standard and well-accepted solution. It has a lot of features, so basically everything that we could think of would be covered by some extension of TLS. But the main problem, in a nutshell, was that making TLS work in restricted kernel with all the limitations that Ivan has described is probably doable, but hard. So at the moment, restricted kernel doesn't support threading. It's written in Rust, so we need the C++ bindings. That entails the use of the STD, which we wanted to avoid. And it's also pretty huge. So what we liked about our solution is that it allowed us to focus on what we wanted to focus first, which was attestation. And just gave us a really minimal solution to plug the gap that we needed to have plugged. And so back to Ivan.
Yeah, so in the end, we had a very specific use case in which we wanted to minimize the TCB to make reviewer's job easier, and we wanted to have a very minimalistic crypto protocol to support our remote attestation. And we ended up with choosing noise protocol framework, picking a pattern, implementing it, and creating an SDK that allows us to bind remote attestation to our crypto protocol. And all of the implementation is open source. You can check it on GitHub, and the first link is our project, which contains multiple use cases, not only the one that I talked previously. This is specifically noise implementation, and this is SDK for attestation binding. So that's pretty much it for the talk. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please feel free to ask any questions. I think we have a first question here. So the question was, can we build firmware ourselves in the restricted kernel? So the idea was that we wanted to split it into two parts. We wanted to have a very, very minimalistic firmware because it's not only for restricted kernel. We have other use cases where we use the same firmware, but for example, load Linux and like load containers on top of it. So this is why we wanted to have this built as a module. It is open source. Yeah, everything is open source. You can find the firmware is called Stage Zero, and it's here. You can find it and build it. Yes, yes. Yes, exactly.
I wanted to comment on the comparison with TLS. As you said it was unfair, but yeah. I want to elaborate on that a little bit, because you don't need to use the C++ implementations, there are also Rust implementations.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there's obviously a reason why there's a lot of code, because actually some of the coworkers have worked on adding new features to translate it into code.
Absolutely agree. Ephemeral key works as a non helps to protect for the replay attacks. For the encrypted messages, nonces are used and they are obligatory for the specified by the protocol. Not in the. I think it's part of the specification that it is. So the question is whether the ephemeral key is a sufficient substitute for nonce, and where it comes from. So in our implementation, it is generated specifically for each session, and it's not coming from the verifier. Yeah, so it's definitely not how we demonstrate the freshness of evidence. I think for the freshness of evidence, Ivan will be better.
So, the freshness is only provided by the evidence itself, by the certificates that we include in the evidence. So, for example, I previously mentioned that we have transparency log inclusion proofs, and they have expiration dates. And this is the main reason how we... this is the main implementation of freshness for the evidence itself. Yeah, as for the nonces in the noise protocol, the handshake contains the ephemeral keys, but then when the protocol starts and when the handshake is finished, we then check that it's actually bound to the evidence, and then there are nonces in the ASGCM protocol that the client and server connect to.
That's a very different interpretation. Did you write this up somewhere?
Yeah, we have it here. Yes.
I would like to elaborate a little bit on that. So the way we normally think about this freshness and evidence is the verifier is sending over a non-sense. Of course, it's different implementations are possible. So the way I think Mohammed Fassi is thinking about is that the verifier is generating that noise. And it's the relying party which is establishing the connections that you have between the relying party and the attester.
Yeah.
This one, yes.
Yeah. So the question was that the confusion comes from the freshness for the verifier or for the relying party. Yeah. In our case, relying party and the verifier is the same thing. It's the client.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you have a verifying and relying party as the...
Yeah, they are both on the device.
Freshness from verifier perspective is not good.
could reach.
Oh, the dice chain. Yeah, the question was where we store the measurement in the dice chain.